is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Financial Beast Plaza on the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. We are keeping a sin flood of statism out of your brain by bombarding you with the frontal lobe, warming rays to reach your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Can you feel it, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? Can you feel it?
I can feel it. My ears are burning and tingling.
Yeah. And I am Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from badquaker.com. What's your radio wrestling name, sir?
Something about a possum. Oh, the bearded possum.
Yeah, it's the bearded
possum. Or it could be the rambling possum.
Yeah, yeah. So where are you and your wife in your van solving mysteries driving around the country today? Where have you landed?
We're currently in southern Alabama, cruising around in the wonderful Gulf region. It's really nice down here.
You're in the Wormabago?
Yeah.
Where's the Gulf region? Where are you in the Gulf region?
Near Mobile Bay, sort of in the Pensacola, Florida, Mobile Bay, Alabama area.
Yeah, we're starting tomorrow on a radio station in Slidell, New Orleans. Slidell/New Orleans, Louisiana. You going to be near there anytime soon?
We were there last month, and we'll probably be there again, say, in the next month or so. So it's really going to be neat to be able to hear the fiends on the radio while we're in a campground. That's really quite a thought.
Yeah, I'll be really psyched about that. So what else is new down there in the adventure seeking of the van?
It's just really neat to be down here, you know, away from the colds of Ohio, where our house is in Ohio, but our home is wherever this motorhome happens to be at the time. So it's kind of nice to not worry about how bad the winter is going to be. Am I going to have to shovel snow? I don't have to, you know, break ice off the windshield to try to emergency run out to get some milk or whatever. We've got everything we need in our motorhome. We could go a couple of weeks without any outside contact if we wanted to. It's really kind of nice.
That sounds kind of blissful. It kind of sounds like a libertarian paradise or lib pair on wheels.
It really kind of is. You know, we can pick and choose who we want to have contact with. The people in campgrounds are generally really friendly, and they have a tendency to leave you alone because generally they like to be left alone.
Yeah.
And you can also, you know, you can live surprisingly inexpensive if you plan it out and if you take a few steps and you know what you're doing. You can arrange ahead of time for like a whole month in a campground for $300-$400, and that includes all your utilities and everything. It's hard to rent a place, you know, that cheap or have house payments that cheap.
Yeah, I think the only cheaper rental house situation in America is probably prison or jail.
Yeah,
it's cheaper for you. It's very expensive for the people who want their politicians to be tough on crime who put you there. You know, it's. Somebody once said, it was in the movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, the movie Nima Vidadi and I made. There's a chap in there who points out that conservatives who back the drug war are usually very against welfare and food stamps. They're not always against, you know, farmer subsidies or corporate welfare, but they're often against any kind of, you know, handouts for the poor. As they should be. They should be against all of it. But the interesting thing is throwing someone in jail for pot or, you know, not having a muffler on their car or having a silencer on their gun is far more expensive than some food stamps. I mean, when you put someone in jail, you're paying for their housing, their room, their board, their medical care, everything.
And a team of guards to constantly watch over them.
Yeah, so be consistent, people. Be consistent. If you don't like one thing, don't like another thing that's the same thing.
And the facilities, the newer facilities that they're putting them in are really expensive to build. I know a few months back, we were in central Missouri, which is, it's really strange. The whole area is like a giant prison system. There's just one big, massive prison right after the next as you're driving around in central and upper Missouri.
The prison district, the prison belt.
It really is. It's weird to see them. And one of the prisons we drove by is an old state hospital that you would think by looking at it that it should have been abandoned about 30 or 40 years ago, but it's still a prison. It's still a prison. Wow. State hospital. And to drive by on the street with the big giant, you know, 15-foot tall wire fences around it with barbed wire on the top and everything. And inside, here's like 20 guys playing basketball. And they just have this look on their face like, you know, just kill me now, that kind of a look on their face. It's really sad.
Yeah. And whether they're there for something that's legitimately a crime where there's a victim, or whether it's something that does not really have a victim, you know, like drugs or not paying your parking tickets or, you know, going over the speed limit too many times on roads that don't have anyone on them, or, you know, not paying your taxes on time, or, oh, any number of other things. You know, there are people who would drive by there and just smile like, you're in there, I'm out here, you must be bad, I'm a good guy, you know, I'm a good boy.
It's really easy to get caught in the prison system, though, because what they'll do is if you have a minor thing that they've caught you with, you know, they have minor marijuana possession or something like that, they will throw on, they'll stack on so many charges of other things, and then they'll almost force you to say uncle. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's all about macho, you know, flash. And so they'll force you to take a plea deal on something that you may not even be guilty of, but it's better than taking, you know, taking the risk of going before a jury over something that could really land you in prison for, you know, 20 years or something. So that you take 2 years as a plea deal on a minor charge that you may not even be guilty of. Well, now you're stuck in a real prison for 2 years. And for a lot of people, that will make a criminal. Even if you weren't a criminal when you went in, when you come out, you're going to be a criminal.
Yeah, you know, in the same way that droning a wedding party to get one bad guy and killing 50 other people, you know, is going to create 50 families of people who wreak vengeance on the nation that blew up the wedding party.
And it's another thing I think we've pointed out on this show quite a few times. You know, they're one state after the next is changing their laws on marijuana, and they're lightening the punishment, or they're making exceptions one way or the other.
Making the leash longer.
Yeah, exactly. But what about all those people who were arrested for, you know, 14 seeds or whatever back in 1988? You know, they're still stuck in the system and not allowed to own a gun, not allowed to go hunting, not allowed to defend themselves.
Can't get a job either.
Yeah.
Can't get a job, end up on welfare, end up doing crimes because they can't get a job.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of what the conservative should, if the conservative is consistent, that's the opposite of what they should want. They shouldn't want a whole nother family dependent upon a system of welfare because they can't get a job because they got arrested for 14 seeds back in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, if you don't believe in welfare, be against the war on drugs. We don't take drugs, but we're very against the war on drugs because it just leads, it's, first of all, it's inhumane, it's cruel. It's, you know, it's absurd as punishing someone for wearing a blue shirt. It's their choice. It doesn't hurt anybody else. And, you know, if you're a gun lover or any other kind of freedom lover, you should be against the war on drugs, because those people that they're training to kick in doors and search people with no probable cause and assume that everyone is the enemy, those people are coming after you too. Those are the same people who are going to kick in your doors and take your guns for having, you know, 11 little bullets in your mag instead of 10, things like that.
Yeah, it is really training for law enforcement to be cold-hearted enough that they'll just take the orders and do what they're told to do and not even question it. Because if they will do this, you know, have a drug raid with SWAT team and throw a flashbang into a crib and do all the things that they do, if they'll do that over a handful of a plant, then eventually their own sense of morality will be beat down to the point of where they'll be given an order, and it will sound legitimate to them. Oh, we've got to get these guns off the street.
And they'll meet early in the morning and say a prayer before they do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. And
they won't really be told the details of it. You know, they'll just be told, this guy's a really bad guy. You know, there's kids in the neighborhood. Your kids might play in this neighborhood. And those guys will go in there thinking they're doing the right thing too. And the funny thing is the crib that you're talking about, where they threw a flashbang through a window, I believe that was a warrant for crystal meth. They didn't find any. But, you know, meth is speed. It's Ritalin. It's, you know, that's the same stuff they're feeding the kids in school, the kids that are too bored to pay attention. They're literally putting them on speed to make them focus and more compliant.
Yeah, and oftentimes that's paid for through the welfare system too.
Yeah.
And all the way up to the kid gets out of high school, and then you yank him off of the dependency of that. Well, he's still dependent on it, but you yank him off of the supply of it, and then you're surprised when he goes to the streets to get essentially the same thing.
Yeah, and he's unemployable because he's been numbed out on drugs and couldn't learn a trade even in school, you know. You don't learn trades in school, but, you know, I was thinking about the people who laugh when they drive by the prison and see the guys depressed, like, you deserve to be in there. You're a different species than me. That's kind of how they feel and how a lot of people think. And the thing is, a lot of people who think that kind of stuff never, like, a lot of them have never had violent thoughts in their life that they can call violent. Like, you know, if somebody beats somebody up, you know, if the government hurts somebody, the thought that somebody might want to do something violent back. Not that I'm saying they should. We're against violence here, but at least aggressive violence. But, you know, there's people who think you're sick if you've ever had a violent thought in your life. You know, like the urge to, like, strike back when someone harms you. But those people have subjugated that into the acceptable form, which is hoping the state will mete out the violence for them.
Yeah, and it's really backwards thinking. I was talking to somebody a couple of years ago who, you know, they claim themselves to be a libertarian and everything. They just hadn't thought this through a little bit.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this topic, and they said, yeah, but you can't let them go unpunished. You have to have some mechanism to punish them. And it's like, yeah, but, well, first off, if there's no victim of a crime, then why do you have the urge to punish somebody if you don't have a victim of that crime? And if you do have a victim, shouldn't it be up to the victim to decide what the punishment is? Not some team of old people who couldn't get out of jury duty?
Who don't understand the ramifications of, you know, why you'd want 11 bullets in your gun instead of 10, or why you might want to, you know, smoke something green instead of drinking the state-run liquor that makes you violent. Yeah. We'll be back with another little segment of How the World Works with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and myself, Michael W. Dean, after this trip to the market. Worms. Give me a worms, Ben.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Yeah. Why do we meow? Is it because there's not enough justice in the world and cats are perfect and wonderful and we want to invoke the beauty and joy and weirdness of cats, Ben?
And that sounds as legitimate as anything else.
So we're talking about justice and how there isn't much in the justice system. What do you got more on that?
Yeah, you know, it's called the criminal justice system because we're told, we're supposed to believe that the system provides justice in dealing with criminals. But does it really? I mean, you know, if you've got, let's say you've got a situation where your neighbor has done something against you. They have crashed into your car.
They've done you wrong.
They've done you wrong some way. They've killed your dog, or they've, you know, beat up your son or whatever. And you get the police involved and the district attorney decides to press charges. And you go through all this process and they find your neighbor guilty of this, whatever this crime is that the neighbor has done. And let's just say for the sake of conversation that it's an actual crime where there was a victim. The victim is your son or your truck or whatever that happened. And And you don't get compensated for that. You have to go through a whole different process to try to get compensated, and you may or may not. You know, you can only, the old phrase is, you can't get blood, you can't squeeze blood out of a rock, or you can't get blood out of a turnip. So you go through the whole process to convict your neighbor of doing whatever this crime is, and you get nothing out of it. It's the state against that neighbor. And he didn't do anything to the state. He didn't harm the people. He harmed you. So if he goes to jail, all that happens to you is you have to pay for him to go to jail. So you were victimized by the neighbor who killed your dog or whatever. And then you've got to pay for your neighbor to be first arrested and then tried and then convicted and then housed. And then when he comes out and can't get a decent job, he goes on welfare, and who pays for that? You do.
Yeah.
Well, that's not justice. How could that possibly be justice? The only way you can have justice is if the victim is the, if compensating the victim is the prime topic when you're thinking about it. If that's what the whole process is for, to compensate the victim, then all of a sudden you're moving towards justice. But that's not the system that we have in America, and it hasn't been for hundreds of years. And just because it's been the system for a couple hundred years doesn't mean it's right. Time doesn't correct something that's wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we have right now. And if we could design a perfect system, somebody might say, well, yeah, but, you know, the system is the best that we have available. It's the best. Well, no, it's really not. I mean, you know, for the victim, he doesn't get anything out of it. He has to go back and hire an attorney and then try to fight through it. And hopefully the criminal has something that the victim can take. If not, you know, he just goes off to jail and has an easy, three meals and three hots and a cot, as they say.
Yeah, I was laughing because I was thinking about a cartoon I saw of like two, was it Aztecs that threw virgins into volcanoes?
Yeah.
It was, you know, virgin being thrown into a volcano, and at the base of the volcano, two Aztecs are talking and one saying to the other, it's not a perfect system, but it's the best one we have.
Yeah, that's really an excuse for not thinking. That's, you know, that's to just say, well, it's what we have, that's what we've got, and we just got to go with it. Well, that's just an excuse for not thinking, not trying to move towards a better society, which really we should all be trying to move towards a better society. And just settling for something, that's kind of like, you know, we've been talking here in the last few days about voting, and voting is admittedly, by people who vote, it's admittedly choosing the lesser of evils. Well, why are you going to choose evil?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with the criminal justice system. If you know it's broken, you know it doesn't do what it purports itself to do, then why do you support it? Why do you want more of it? And that's not even counting that most of what goes on in the criminal justice system has no victim. And that's what we've been talking about, that, you know, when you have somebody is selling alcohol that they made themselves. And this, we don't think about this very much because most people don't think about bootleggers and that kind of stuff. But let's just take that for instance. Somebody brews alcohol themselves, and they sell it to their friends or they sell it to acquaintances, and that's against the law, and you can do hard jail time for that.
Yeah.
Well, how is that a punishable crime? Who is the victim? And you might say, well, what if you make bad alcohol? Well, then what if Kmart makes bad stuff, or what if Walmart makes bad stuff?
Yeah. We'll have more after this trip to the free market, where unfortunately they're not selling moonshine, but my cat's happy. He's running around making noise. He's chiming in. He joins the show. Peanut joins the show. Worms. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience chronic blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's LibertariansAgainstHumanity.com.
Yeah. Hello, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. How are you?
I'm good, Michael. How are you doing today?
I'm nifty.
You got happy cats walking around you?
I do. Happy cats walking around me. Yeah. So we're talking about the criminal justice system. I've heard from a show called Breaking Bad that to navigate the criminal justice system, you don't need a criminal attorney. You need a criminal attorney.
Yeah, that's Saul. What was it?
Saul Goodman.
Saul Goodman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me more about this. Oh, go ahead, sir.
I was just going to say he's an underappreciated character in that show.
He really is. There was talk of a spinoff, but I've yet to see it. I'd watch it at least once.
Yeah, I'd give it a shot. That was a really good show. I really appreciate that series, all the effort that they put into it, and as genuine as they made it.
Yeah, man. TV's getting better and better and better, especially now that the internet's getting involved and you've got like Netflix producing original shows like House of Cards. I think it all started with, I think the show that really changed a lot was The Shield. And I hate to say it because it's a cop show, but it was gritty in a way that wasn't, it wasn't just gritty and shock and awe like other gritty cop shows going back to Serpico. Although I think Serpico and Dirty Harry really opened the hornet's nest of not having, you know, cops being two-dimensional cardboard cutout heroes, of actually having like being human and having some problems, like some really big problems sometimes.
I think one of the flaws in Breaking Bad, and they had to put this in for television, it had to be an aspect, you know, conflict.
Crime can't pay.
Yeah, exactly. You have to somehow, even if you like the bad guys, you have to give them enough flaws that you can kill them or get them arrested in the end or whatever. And it's not really like that in real life. There are a lot of people in that are producing drugs, that are distributing drugs, that are selling drugs, that are everyday people, that are really nice people. They go to church, they pay their taxes, they do business with their friends, they're not violent. And that's something that's very rarely actually shown in TV and movies and so forth.
And they go to church and pay their taxes. Well, you know, Walt in Breaking Bad paid taxes, at least on the money he laundered, and went to family functions and cared about his, you know, differently abled son and was the best husband he could be to that woman.
All things considered.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they had to write into the character his, what's his name? Heisenberg.
Heisenberg, yeah.
They had to write into the character his evil side so that they could eventually get away with killing him off, because you can't kill you can't kill very many innocent people and make the series still good.
Yeah. It also, there's anybody out there who's an aspiring script writer or, you know, wants to make short films for the YouTubes or even wants to do, you know, sock puppet shows at Bible camp to entertain your friends, whatever you want to do, anything that involves writing a story. The number one rule other than conflict is the essence of drama, which is kind of overused to the point of hilarity. But yeah, without conflict, not much happens in a story. And, but the really important thing, and I learned this from something from the movie I made, Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow. We interviewed this guy, Jerry Stahl, who's a novelist and was also one of the first writers on CSI and helped kind of form that show to what it was. But he said, when he'd written, and I talked about this recently, when he, but we're on different stations on the weekends than we are at night. So, you know, he said that, that when he wrote his book Permanent Midnight, which was in, you know, kind of thinly veiled autobiography of his days, being a heroin addicted screenwriter working on the TV show Alf, which, yes, that really happened. And that's probably why Alf was what it was. He wrote this book Permanent Midnight, which was later made into a movie where Ben Stiller played him. And it was a pretty good Hollywood popcorn flick. But, when he took a draft of it to Hubert Selby and showed it to him, Selby read it and he's like, you know, you're a good writer, kid, but, main character is not likable. You have to care what happens to him, which is kind of bizarre to say to the guy because the character is the guy writing it. But characters, main characters have to be likable. I mean, they can be despicable people. The really good example, you know, is House of Cards, Frank Underwood, or FU, as he's known to friends and enemies alike. Frank Underwood is despicable. I mean, he's a politician that makes, you know, Barack Obama and George Bush combined look like a choir boy. But he is likable. You kind of care what happens to him, man.
And just a little behind the scenes, because this is a teaching hospital.
Oh, yeah.
When we repeat something like that, let's say we talk about something on one show and then 2 or 3 days later or a week later, we repeat it again. It's because, you know, to a certain extent, we have people who listen to this show on the internet and they follow along and they know from episode to episode or whatever. But we also have a large quantity of people who are listening on actual radio who are just, you know, they're driving to the grocery store and they're only going to hear 5 minutes of the show. Or they're driving, like you always say, they're going from Sunday school to a VFW picnic or whatever. And they're only listening to a few minutes of the show. So they may not know these insider things about us. So that's why we repeat them sometimes.
Yeah.
Is to explain who we are and why we're talking about these crazy things.
Yeah. And a lot of radio shows, you know, they do a good job of complaining about Barack Obama and pointing out the fact that he is a liar. He is a socialist and his feet stink. And I try to say that at least once an hour, if we're not talking about politics, so people know where we stand. And that's part of where we stand is that, you know, that guy and every politician ever, except maybe Ron Paul, was a crook and a stinker and a murderer. But, you know, and Ron Paul, he was our favorite government thug, and we like him better now that he's just being a grandpa and writing books and tweeting on the inner tweets. He was, but, you know, it's kind of interesting that he existed as a congressman for so many years, because it's kind of like, you know, if you hold up the lantern looking for the one true man, I guess there was, you know, one guy in the crooked, horrible, wrong, immoral game of politics who actually played by the rules and tried to do right. You know, he's the only one.
And they rewarded him for that by ignoring him, by making fun of him, by shouting him down, by cutting his funding for his district. I mean, they did everything they could to make life as miserable as possible on him.
Yeah. And his son is not his dad. Rand Paul is a skunk in libertarian clothing. He likes to sound like his dad, but he's not his dad. There's actually a thing going around. It's pretty funny. It's a meme of a meme image on the interfaces on the face beefs of Ron Paul tweeted yesterday. I guess the Republicans won back part of the Congress or something. Did that happen? I don't know.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
I don't follow that stuff. I only knew about that because I heard about this tweet. Ron Paul tweeted that's going to directly lead to more interventionism and war and boots on the ground and, you know, American soldiers dying overseas or something. And which is true, you know, and the meme was that tweet and then a picture of Rand Paul looking kind of disgusted. And the caption was, "Dad, not in front of my friends."
Poor little Rand.
I know.
Yeah, he is definitely not even the shadow of his father. He lacks the consistency and he lacks the fortitude to stand up for what's right.
Yeah, whoever wrote that character, Rand Paul, didn't understand that you have to make even the most flawed characters likable. Ron Paul is flawed and very, very likable.
Yeah, he is. And I think that is it. Ron Paul does have flaws. He's not the perfect human. You know, some God sent angel to take us into the next generation or anything like that. He's just a regular guy that's lovable and he has grandkids and he rides a tractor and he does all those regular things like that. But he does have flaws because he's human. And that's the problem with leadership, is that so often it's assumed that we have taken these great men and they've raised up through some kind of special means and that they're somehow better than the rest of us. And that's why they're able to do things like write laws and tell us what is good and what is bad. And they can choose what is good and evil. They have that fruit of the knowledge of good and evil in them. That's the belief.
What they really have is the fruit of the poison tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have
to borrow a legal phrase. Yeah.
they have pushed God off the throne. They have pushed the lawmaker off the throne and set themselves up as gods, as the people who choose what is good and what is evil and what is right and what is wrong. And that's blasphemous.
And as a Quaker minister, you notice that kind of stuff.
I do. That's really what stands out to me, that government is a collection of regular people like everybody else that we have exalted and put up on high and decided that, and call them lawmakers. That alone is blasphemous, because there's only one law and there's only one lawgiver. And, you know, and that I say that because I am a Quaker. I am a theist. I believe that there is a God. And, you know, and if you don't believe that, what do you believe in? Okay, you believe, maybe you believe that mankind came about by a series of random events through evolutionary processes. Okay, I'm comfortable with that. But then what within that realm that you've created there of an evolutionary model, what gives one group of humans the right to rule over the others and say, you're allowed to own this plant in your yard, but you're not allowed to have this plant? You can grow this tomato, but you can't grow this other plant over here that makes you feel good. And
yeah,
there's nothing in nature to do that.
I would say that the voting process and the idea of representation and leaders is not only counterintuitive to believing in God as the Almighty, but also it's totally counterintuitive to natural selection. There's nothing natural selection about someone becoming a politician other than, you know, the most sociopathic one wins.
Yeah, it's really is backwards. Even if you only believe in evolution, it's backwards to evolutionary thinking to think that that the majority of the herds can decide what's best. It's backwards, because if that's the case, you know, eventually it's going to drive the species into extinction.
Yeah. That's so square.
I don't like to be extinct.
I don't want to be extinct either, man. And there's a lot of people who, politicians especially, who seem to be nudging us that way. You know, when I was a kid, it was the H-bomb that was going to do it, and no, I just think it's politics in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Square.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to go to the market again.
Back then.
Which is fun. We'll be back. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash, if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, fill me in on more of your theology of why government is horrible. Before we start that, I got a little aside on the same topic. Do you ever see those Christian tracts, those little cartoon booklets called Chick Tracts?
Yeah.
You can go to chick.com. Somehow they grabbed that domain pretty early on. A couple of interesting things about that. I was looking at their website last night. I've seen those my whole life. You know, when I was a kid, they used to literally scare the hell into me or out of me. I'm not sure which, but the guy is 90 years old. He's still writing those things. And he was inspired to do that by finding out that in China, they helped spread communism with little pamphlets and illustrated pamphlets. So I think somebody should do an Indiegogo and do like a libertarian anarcho-capitalist version of that kind of idea. Not really a parody of those pamphlets in general, but that kind of idea. I think it'd be a good way to spread basic ideas of liberty. I also think someone needs to come up with a pocket loo. It's a running joke because there's, you know, pocket constitutions, people carry them. And our friend Lou can dispel any myth about the state if someone says, well, why don't you just move to Somalia? Well, what about the roads? Like, he has the instant answer for all of that, or two or three answers. I think there should be an app for your crumbed robot turd, your iPhone or your Android phone, called a pocket loo, and it'd be like 99 cents or $1.99. And you would just, whenever a statist starts telling you this ridiculous crap, you just pull it out and, you know, like, use the voice recognition and hold it up to them when they say the thing, and it would just give you, you know, four cogent answers to throw back at them. But I was looking at the chick tracks, and there was this one called, I don't know, it was about a rock band that sells their soul to Satan and then ends up, you know, going from playing bars for $200 to playing, you know, stadiums and being the most popular band in the world. And then, like, I don't know, dying of AIDS and drug overdoses and fires. And the last remaining member finds God and all is redeemed. And then he gets a career traveling around telling people why rock and roll is evil. But there's the manager that they get is actually the devil. And his name is Lou Siffer, Mr. Siffer. And Lou actually has meetings to control the world. Like, he's like the shadow, you know, the Sumerian prophecy of the one world government or something, kind of combined with the devil. And he's got this like corporate meeting room where he's got these demons sitting around, and they're giving him their quarterly reports. And on the wall, he has this graph, and it says anarchy, and it's like on the rise. You know, it looks like a profit margin going up, and it says anarchy. And I'm thinking, like, no, man, when the devil, whether he's real or, you know, the idea of the devil, the idea of evil, whichever you think, you know, when the devil is on the rise, you know, anarchy is not on the rise, because anarchy is not chaos. Anarchy is a lack of rulers, and it is self-rule. And there's ways it could work, I think. I think we have tried everything else. We tried governments. People tried communism. They tried democracy. They tried, you know, it's the best system we got. What about no system, man? What about people taking care of their own? Tell me how that could work and why that's not crazy, Ben.
Sure. Well, you know, imagine yourself if you were a creator of a universe, you were a god.
And God willing, one day I will be.
And you decided.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm not blaspheming. You can put your things away. Yep.
Put the stakes away. You don't have to drive it through anybody's heart.
Yep.
But if you were a god and you wanted to create something that would be a companion for you, humanity, you wanted to create humanity to be a companion for you, you would want that to voluntarily be your companion. You wouldn't want a slave.
Yeah.
And this is what this is the basic story that's in the Bible. And I'm not saying that every word of the Bible is right or whatever, but I'm saying that this is the basic story, that God is creating for himself a companion. And that companion, you would want that companion to be voluntary. You wouldn't want to force people to behave in a certain way. And that's the essence of Christianity. The essence of Christianity is that people will choose to be a companion to God. Not that God has to force them through a series of laws and rules, but that we will someday realize that we can choose to be a companion to God. And that's not done through a top-down bureaucracy.
Where can people find more of Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker's wisdom and silly thoughts and great thoughts? And there are silly thoughts in there. You will admit that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a good dude.
But, I'm a human.
My website's at badquaker.com.
Yeah. Badquaker.com. That's badquaker.com. And we'll be back for hour two after this trip to the free market and some news about what's happening in the world that may just scare the pants off you. But then you can put your pants back on and listen to hour two of the Freedom Fiends. Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at trueshibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker in an undisclosed location. In the rural, wild, mountain west, in the occupied states of America, I am Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, and on the other end of the inner tubes, we have Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, also known as the Bearded Possum. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I am here, I am safe, and the government has no idea where I'm at.
That's what you think. I still think you have your own private drone following you around the country at this point.
It could be. I don't know who those guys in that van are that keep following me. But
yeah, it's probably, it might not be an armed drone. You know, it might just be a surveillance drone. They have those.
Yeah. You know, and we should mention, we haven't said it in a while, that when we say worms, people might listen to that and think, what are they talking about? But that's kind of like our little code that says everything's still cool. We're still getting along. We're still agreeing with each other. And we haven't been compromised.
By the government.
Yeah.
It also means we like fishing.
Yeah, fishing worms.
Do you do any fishing?
Not very often, but a little bit now and then. We have poles with us in the motorhome, and many of the places that we go to have good-sized lakes or ponds that you can fish at without the interference of the government.
Hmm. I'm intrigued.
And that's an interesting, this is an interesting concept that, you know, like if you go, let's say, to Mobile Bay or out on the Gulf where you're just on, maybe you're on private property, maybe you're on other property, whatever, but you are not allowed to just throw a net out into the water and try to catch some fish to eat, or throw a pole, you know, throw a line out into the water and try to catch a fish. You're not allowed to do that without the permission of the government.
It's the king, the king's fish.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it comes from. That's the origin of the thought that the government somehow owns wildlife that are out there in the ocean or whatever. It's an odd thing because humanity has lasted for as long as humanity has lasted without permission to feed ourselves. And now all of a sudden we accept this idea that we have to have a permission slip to fish.
Yeah, that's square.
Very odd.
Because, you know, for the price of a fishing license, you could buy, how much are they? Do you know?
They change state by state. For, I believe, for the state that we're in, Alabama, for a non-resident of Alabama for 6 months, I believe it was something like $60.
Man, you could buy six packs of Freedom Fiends buttons for that much, because they're only $10 each. And you can go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons. You know, I also want to talk about something. Can you pull up a webpage here? Go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
My computer's a little bit slow, but I'll get there eventually.
Yeah. It's we talked about it the other night. It's a game created by my friend Jim Jesus. I helped out a little bit. Daryl Perry, a couple other people helped out a little bit writing cards for it. But it's basically kind of like the game Apples. It's based on Cards Against Humanity, which is kind of like Apples to Apples for, you know, malcontents. And he made an expansion deck called Libertarians Against Humanity, and he's doing a fundraiser to raise money to make actual decks, and the people who chip in on it will get actual printed decks of it. And it's doing quite well, and I'm really psyched for him. So go Google Libertarians Against Humanity. It's kind of hard to spell. It's a long... long URLs. I just put them into Google, and Google corrects my impure spelling. So, are you there? I mean, I know you're there, but are you on the site?
I'm getting there slowly. Google gave me a bunch of other things first, which were
that's not
like
what
things
I said
like
it would
Freedom
do.
Fiends.
Oh yeah, it gave all the other places that list it. Yeah. Well, while you're waiting for your rural internets to load, let's skip to the next topic, which is the great man fallacy. Now, Davi and I talked for about a half hour about this the other night. It was, we talked about the really silly thing that people do as a ethics mind twister exercise of, if you could go back in time and kill Hitler as a baby, would you do it? And it's a ridiculous, you know, the thing about that kind of stuff, those kind of lifeboat scenarios, you know, you're in a lifeboat, there's six people and one gun with one bullet and only enough food for five people. Who do you shoot? And then they list, you know, what these people do for society, like a doctor, a lawyer, and, you know, and everybody says the lawyer, but, you know, the thing is, like, first of all, they're ridiculous. They're kind of like voting where you only have two choices and they're the same choice, you know, like the lifeboat scenario, boat scenario. If you had enough food for five people and you had six people, you could stretch it to keep six people alive, you know?
Yeah.
And, if you want to like issue letters of marque in your mind to go time travel and kill baby Hitler, it wouldn't change it. First of all, it's the thing that really bothers me about these kind of things is they're the kind of thought experiments that really, really, really entertain like 12-year-olds. And the thought that like adults go to college or go on the internet and, you know, debate these for days or weeks, it's ridiculous to me. It's really got no bearing on society. It doesn't tell you anything about yourself as a person. It might be useful when you're 12 to kind of like figure out, wow, I guess in life it's useful to have an opinion on something and have a, you know, line in the sand or something. But also the idea of, you know, if you said, yes, I'd go back and shoot baby Hitler, you know, would you actually? You'd be a baby killer, man. And, you know, baby Hitler wasn't Hitler. There's probably some nature and nurture in there. But so tell me about the great man fallacy and why it also works with the horrible great man, you know, the greatly horrible man.
Yeah, this really gained popularity in the early 1800s as people were trying to explain the appearance of certain individuals in society, like specifically Napoleon Bonaparte and Nelson among the English sailors. Nelson stood out as being just an amazing individual. To Americans, they idolized George Washington and some of the other so-called founding fathers. And the idea was, and this was spoken of openly, it was not a quiet theory somewhere. It was actually taught as being true. The theory was that there, within nature or within, you know, God's plan, however you looked at it, there were certain individuals who were by birth special. They had special characteristics. They were maybe more evolved than everybody else, or maybe they were blessed by God, or they were sent by God. And there was different ways of theorizing this according to what you already believed. They adjusted the story to fit your beliefs. So the idea was that God had given us this special guy like Napoleon Bonaparte. And because of that, that's how he was able to lead all these people and do all these magnificent things. But then when the tides of politics changed and Napoleon became the bad guy, then the same theory could be used to explain Napoleon, because yes, he is an unbelievably bad guy. He's still a great man, though. He still fits this criteria. It's just that he's turned bad. And so this idea that there walks among us certain individuals that are just special, they're different than the rest of us, that's the problem. And Herbert Spencer was an English thinker. He was a philosopher. And he sat down with this idea and just picked it apart completely and showed that it's not a special human being that comes up, either a special bad guy or a special good guy. There is a market for a leader. People are looking for somebody to take them out of this bad situation that they're in and bring them into a good situation. And so people will create this great man. It's not that he's not given to us by God, or he's not given to us by evolution. If it wasn't him, it'd be somebody else. It's that mankind himself, mankind among all of us, create this great man. And then we put upon him all the things that we want for him to have, all the characteristics that we want him to have. We want him to be this great leader. We want him to be able to speak in a certain way and convince people in certain ways. We want him to be able to lead an army or, you know, convince a population of something or whatever. So when men like Teddy Roosevelt stand up and do amazing things, it's not because they themselves are any more special than anyone else. It's just that the circumstances around them are such that it provides that particular person the opportunity to step into those pre-made shoes. It's kind of like there was a Brady Bunch episode where there was this music producer dude that was
Johnny Fabulous or what was –
Yeah, it was the coat, something like
the one
that.
About the coat, like the coat fit, that one.
Yeah, yeah. They were just looking for somebody that had the right look that would fit the coat that they already had.
Yeah, I think the manager's name was Mr. Siffer, Louis Siffer. Yeah.
Well, that's the perfect example of the great man theory. They weren't looking for an actual talented person who was amazing and could do things nobody else could do. They were looking for somebody that fit the coat, and it just so happened to be Greg Brady. And it could have been anybody, you know?
Yeah,
it could have been Marcia.
That episode was actually really important to me. I saw it when I was about 10, which is probably when it broadcast live, premiered for the first time, not in reruns. And it kind of taught me some lessons about how media and the entertainment industry worked. And, you know, later I was in a band that got signed to Warner Brothers, and it was nothing like that, but it was kind of disappointing like that.
But there were actually bands that were created, and still today even are, that were created using that method. I mean, that's where, what was the Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
The Monkees,
quite possibly. It's been alleged that the Doors were created like that.
Yep. I think the Flying Burrito Brothers or the Birds, one of them. No, the Birds. It was the Birds, man. Yeah.
Yep. And modern, I mean, there's no other explanation for how we got the Backstreet Boys, you know, other than that.
They'd kind of codified that into a template for boy bands and young girl pop singers by the 80s. I think Tiffany was the first one. And then, and then there was, what was the one that Marky Mark was in? Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, I can't remember one from the other. It all blends together for me.
Yeah. I think they're called 98% or 38 degrees or something like that. No, I don't know.
But yeah, that's the idea that, you know, it's not really important. There's no substance to it. So Hitler, you go back to Hitler. So it wasn't that baby Hitler was destined to be evil. If somebody had killed baby Hitler, the situation for a Hitler was already there.
Yeah. The evil was looking for the guy who fit the coat.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Strong words, Ben. Strong, powerful words. Strong, powerful, and baffling words. And we'll be back to clarify them with some clarifying solution, which you can probably buy at the market. And we're taking a trip to the market. So enjoy.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squisgar Squigelts from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM, That's LRN.FM.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Tell me more, Ben Stone.
Yeah. So, who fits the coat? Who fits the coat?
I think anybody who tries to obtain public office is probably a sociopath. You know, you don't. I mean, there are people who get into politics because things are wrong and they want to fix them. But either once they're in there very far, it changes them. Or I think most of the people that go after it, because basically what you're saying is, I want to rule my fellow man and I'm smarter than him.
Yeah, that really is the essence of politics. Even if the person, like you said, even if they go into it with good motivations, the process will grind you down. I mean, it happens like 99.9% of the time. It will grind you down. It will tempt you with things. Let me go off on a rant, if you don't mind, Michael. Let me go off on a rant about Jesus.
Let me say one thing before you do. I'd be happy to have you do it. But anytime there's a situation where they're just looking for someone that fits the coat, where there's already the pipeline and they just need to ship people through it, whether it's politics or the music business or, you know, the prison industrial complex, the people that run any system where people are forced through a tube or invited to be forced through a tube, those people all end up corrupt. And most people that go through the tube are corrupted or harmed by it. Go ahead with your Jesus talk, sir.
Yeah. So the story in the Bible, Jesus was tempted and he was taken high up on this high point where he could see out all over the world. And the devil showed him all the great governments of the world and said, and the devil actually said to Jesus, I have been given authority over all these things. And if you'll bow before me, I'll give you this authority. I'll make you the head of all these. So literally, what's happening in that story is that the devil, who is in charge of all governments, offers Jesus a position in government to be head of all the governments, and Jesus turns him down. And that alone, if you don't think of anything else in the Bible, think of that alone. That's what is happening. That's what politics offers to a person. It's that temptation that you can be dominant over all of your fellow mankind. You can be that one up on the mountain controlling the government. And that's really what the great man theory, why it fell apart, why Herbert Spencer was able to take it apart so thoroughly, is because anybody will fit that suit. Because who's pulling the strings in that? In the situation with Jesus and the devil, Jesus would have given up all of everything that he had in order to get that authority that's given to him by the devil. Well, that means the devil's the one pulling the strings. The devil is the one who's made that pipeline that you were talking about that's shoving him through it. So, you know, if you're thinking of going into politics because you think you can make things better by going into politics, what you're actually going to do is corrupt yourself. And you're just going to feed the process that keeps mankind held down.
Yeah.
That's square.
It is really square, man. Yeah. I've known a few politicians in my life. They kind of remind me of actors. I've known a few Hollywood actors in my life. I've met a few, you know, I've worked with a few big stars, but I've been good friends with a couple. I'm not going to name names, but you know, people that you wouldn't recognize their name, but if I said the movie, you'd be like, oh yeah, her, you know? And yeah, a lot of them are really messed up. Like, especially the ones that started acting when they were like six and had, you know, pushy stage mothers or whatever, but they're
constantly
like politicians.
Go ahead. Constantly pretending to be something that you're not, I think grinds at your mind.
Yeah. I think to the point where you don't know who you are. And, I've never dated an actress, but I know a few people who have, and it's kind of a mind melting experience because, you know, you never know if you're talking to the real person or if they're putting on an air, and sometimes the person doesn't even know. I imagine politicians are like that too. And they probably, I believe that like most sociopaths, most politicians probably believe they are good people or great people. You know, I don't think they sit there like rubbing their hands like Mr. Burns going, I'm so evil, it's wonderful. You know, I think they're good, but they're definitely not.
You know, I've known some really hardcore criminals too in my day, especially back in the late 70s. And some of the people I hung out with were not pleasant people at all, but none of them thought of themselves as being bad. And these were hard hitters. These were guys who had, you know, they had dropped bodies down mine shafts.
Yeah.
But they didn't think of themselves that way.
Yeah. And you've been shot a few times and lived to tell about it.
Oh yeah.
We'll have more after this trip to the market. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
How the world works, especially the great man fallacy or great man theory, and why, if you went back in time, even if you had a letter of mark as enumerated in the Constitution, if you had a letter of mark and went back in history and murdered baby Hitler, all you'd be is a baby killer, man.
Yeah, that would not be very cool. Because what a lot of people don't realize, because, you know, not everybody studies history constantly.
Yeah.
To a lot of people, history is really long and boring, and it's presented by schools, by government schools, as being, you know, just not very fun at all. But if you go back and you actually study, why did these things happen? And you look at the situation surrounding Adolf Hitler, he grew up in very harsh circumstances, in a very bad setting. And I'm not trying to say, oh, well, he had a hard life, so we have to forgive him. No. If a person does bad things, punish him. You know, I'm perfectly fine with that. But there was a bigger thing happening than just that individual guy. You know, the whole mess that started out and ended with World War One happening, and the struggle that was taking place in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and all of that stuff added together to cause the collapse of the Austrian, of the old existing Austrian government, and caused the, you know, all the war that took place in World War One, and that created a scenario where the German people were forced to surrender in World War One under really bad circumstances, and that created a situation where they had the peace treaty of Versailles, which really put a huge financial burden onto Germany and laid the entire blame for the war on Germany, which is a falsity anyway. And then a whole generation of Germans growing up being taxed to unbearable levels to pay for this war debt. And they, and the whole generation of them were so frustrated, and they had been taught over and over that, you know, the Jews are the bad guys, the French are the bad guys, the English are the bad guys. And they had this instilled into their minds for an entire generation. So that's why I say that if it wasn't Hitler, it would have been somebody else. It was just, they had the coat that needed to be filled, and Hitler happened to be the stooge that was able to stand up and give speeches. And so the coat fit him, they put the coat on Hitler, and then his mind changed. And you, if you actually study the man from about 1932 to about 1942, you see a guy consistently going insane. And part of that also was that Adolf Hitler was in the, he had a doctor.
The Ritalin.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. His doctor basically was injecting him with meth for years.
Benzedrine. I think it's Benzedrine, yeah. But yeah. Same effect.
Right. So to go back and kill baby Hitler would do no good for anything. It would just make you, like you said, it would make you a baby killer.
Yeah.
It's the process that built him. That's the problem. It's the governmental system that requires us to have a great man. And, you know, it could have gone the same way in any other direction had there been a different guy instead of Adolf Hitler. You know, it could have been
Francis Ferdinand if he hadn't been shot in before World War One.
Yeah, and actually, that guy was a reformer. He was staged to take over his uncle's empire, and he was very sympathetic to the plight of the poor and to the plight of the Bosnians and so forth.
I also think that any of the right hand men who surrounded Hitler would have could have stepped up and taken the place if any of them had charisma. I'm not sure they did or not. Some of them did.
Yeah, they could have easily, and some of them may have even been worse. I mean, I don't know what a world would look like with Heinrich Himmler in charge of an army. That's a pretty scary thought.
In charge of your health care.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what, you know, once we buy the lies of government, then we buy the lie that there has to be a head of government, and it's got to be some great man that can tell us all, you know. So let's take it to modern times. Whether we're talking about Ronald Reagan or we're talking about Bill Clinton or we're talking about George W. Bush or we're talking about, you know, Barack Obama, really, we're talking about a guy who fits the jacket that they want, that they're handing to us. Right now, Barack Obama is being demonized because, you know, the left wing policies that he's putting in on us. But we're being set up for another jacket, for a jacket that fits the opposite of Barack Obama. And some slimy politician will be offered to us, and the public will run to him as our, you know, as the savior, literally as the savior from Barack Obama, whether that be another left-wing person or a right-wing person like another Bush or, you know, a Perry or whoever. Whoever they offer to us, it's just going to be a guy that fits that jacket. That's all it's going to be. And in addition to that, I was talking before the break about people who are actually bad people who don't realize they're bad. And you could say that about Barack Obama. You know, we say all the time that he's a liar and a socialist and his feet stink. But I've known people, really hard hitters, bikers that were really bad people, and they didn't realize that they were bad, or they didn't think of themselves as being bad. But these, some of them were really, really bad guys. Probably. I never met him, but probably the classic example of that would be Charlie Manson.
You say it like people would expect that you'd met him. I never met him, but during the 70s when I was hanging out with bad people, I never met him, but
I've stayed at his ranch. at the
The Spahn Ranch.
Yeah, the desert ranch that's out there.
Yeah, it's dark. What's left of it?
Yeah, one town that I used to work in, there was still several family members, you know, Manson family members that would be wandering around town, just kind of looking goofy, taking donations from the local people. But even Charles Manson, he never really thought of himself as being a bad guy. He was just filling an opportunity. And he had a pretty bad childhood and a pretty bad upbringing, and it created the monster that we know of. But had it not been him, it probably would have been somebody else leading those kids. It's just his twisted mind was the one that ended up, you know, giving the orders and so forth. But that's the thing with bad people. They don't necessarily realize how bad they are. But if you take one of these human beings that are naturally flawed, and you put them into a position where they control a nuclear arsenal, or they control drones that can kill wedding parties, you have set yourself up to have a leader that is flawed and is going to do bad things and is not going to do the things that you expect them to do.
Yeah.
In the case of George W. Bush, I think a lot of people thought at the end of the Clinton era, a lot of people thought George W. Bush is going to come in, he's going to cut taxes, he's going to make things better, he's going to reduce the size and the scope of government. And he did none of those things.
Yeah, and he got all those bad people in the Middle East because he had, I know he did, because he said mission accomplished. He had proof.
Yeah. And what he actually did was make them all even angrier at us, at Americans, and he in essence he poured gasoline on a burning fire.
Yeah,
not a good thing.
Yeah, and I think he was just stupid. I think the people pulling his strings though were evil geniuses.
Yeah, the guy's controlling the jacket. And I should clarify, you know, we on the Freedom Fiends, now I'm speaking collectively, but we don't necessarily believe that there's a small family in northern France that control all the banks and all the politicians. And, you know, we don't necessarily go that far with our.
No.
But it's the natural thing for people with power to control other people with power.
Yeah, I mean, I believe, though, that there are people on this planet that make Bill Gates look like a pauper.
Yeah, there is hidden ways to have money that are, you know, like Bill Gates has a lot of money, but he has a lot of money very publicly.
Yeah.
And there are people who control large amounts of gold and large amounts of land that are not that public.
There's also some libertarian money out there that's no one really knows who it is, but Satoshi Nakamoto, who invented Bitcoin, and I'm not trying to compare him to the Bilderberger group or anything, but, you know, he's kind of the free market version of that. Something like 1 million Bitcoin in the original block, the Genesis block and blocks after that, that have never been spent, that whoever created Bitcoin is sitting on, you know, and it's 1 million Bitcoin. And what are their price? Like 400 something now. So that person,
I think
it's
about 350.
Yeah. That person has, you know, they could have cashed it out when it was 1,000, they would have had $1 billion.
Yeah. But even now at 350 each, that's $350 million that they're sitting on.
Yeah. That's pretty good for something. Somebody sat down at their computer and wrote.
And it's been claimed that Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme of some kind, and it's really not. It doesn't fit go ahead.
Yeah, that's people who don't understand it.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't fit the description of a Ponzi scheme.
That's about as accurate as saying the internet is a series of tubes.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good comparison.
If you want to know what this noise is, it's me putting together a Freedom Fiends button order. I got one during the show, and I just like to do them. I like to put them together.
Michael's playing with bubble wrap.
I am. Yeah. So bring us home. Bring us home for this. You got about a minute here.
Yeah. So what were we talking about? Bubble wrap and cats, wasn't it?
No, evil. I think it was evil. Evil trillionaires.
Yeah. You know, there are some really rich people out there. And even if they're not as rich as you might imagine, they control people who are rich. There was a guy back in the early 1900s and I'm stalling because his name doesn't come immediately to mind. Was it J.P. Morgan? I think it was J.P. Morgan that wasn't as rich as most people thought that he was, but he controlled the stocks of a lot of people who were really rich.
Yeah.
So that made him far more powerful than he would have been with just his own wealth.
Well, I mean, Barack Obama, you know, on paper has about $5 million, and most of that is from book sales, and he didn't have much money when he became president compared to most people to become president. But, you know, I mean, he could literally do a he controls all the armies, all the navies, all the military. He controls, you know, every piece of property in America and a lot of the stuff around the world. And there's somebody pulling his strings that's got more. I mean, maybe not pulling his strings on a day-to-day basis with every decision, but there are people that can tell him what to do, and he'd be smart to do it. So somebody's richer than that.
Yeah.
We'll be back for the redemption in the third act after this trip to the free market. Free market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends. Redemption in the third act. We got it right here. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. And me, Michael W. Dean, Freedom Fiend. So, Ben.
Ben. Michael.
Yes.
Mike.
Are you safe?
I'm safe.
You haven't been contacted by the government?
The government has not touched me in any special places.
Show me on the doll where the government touched you, Ben. All right.
And we do like to do a redemption in the third act. We like to not, we don't want to just complain and say, oh, the government's terrible. Barack Obama stinks.
He does.
We want to give a plan. We want to give hope for the future. We want to give some redemption in the third act.
What's your plan? You do a lot of complaining. What would you do if you were in charge?
Yeah. So, you know, libertarianism is based on something that we call the non-aggression principle, or I like to call it the zero aggression principle. And the idea is that if people don't initiate aggression on anyone else, then it doesn't really matter what they do. If somebody's in their own yard and they're planting tomatoes and they're not harming you with their tomato planting, then you don't have the right to go get city council and have their yard plowed up and destroy their tomatoes. You should respect what they're doing. They're not bothering you in any way. And that's the basis of the non-aggression principle. And that's the basis of libertarianism. And a lot of people get confused about that because they think, oh, libertarians are for pot, or libertarians just want to destroy the government, or libertarians want to see the poor starve. None of that is true. Libertarianism is based on not initiating aggression on anyone else.
And not doing it by proxy through the government either.
Yeah, exactly. Not having your city council do it for you, or the president do it for you, or the Senate do it for you. And not aggressing on somebody else, but expecting that the other person is not going to aggress on you, demanding that the other person not aggress upon you. And that's what libertarianism is about. And then applying that principle consistently is the task of libertarianism. And we're not always good at it. Libertarians are flawed. We are human beings and we get confused sometimes. And we argue sometimes about, you know, what is aggression and is that aggression? Is it aggression to use the government to do this? Is it aggression to use the government to do that? Is it aggression to vote? Well, in the long run, that's our desire, is to determine what is and what isn't aggression and live our lives the same. You know, I talked about Jesus a few times. That's basically the golden rule. That's what Jesus said. It all wraps up with this: do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And that's half the zero aggression principle. The other half is expect them to treat you that same way. So that's all we're asking. We're not just holding hands and singing songs and say, give peace a chance. We have some substance to what we say. We believe that market demand will fix things, like we talk about the roads. If people want there to be roads, then there will be a market demand for roads, and somebody will be willing to put the effort or to put the money into it and build the roads. And it can be any other thing that we think of. This is what the government provides for us. Well, who is it really that's providing that? Isn't it really people? Isn't it people that build those things? Isn't it air traffic controllers? Aren't those people that control all those airplanes up in the sky and keep them from ramming into each other? Yes. It's people that do this. And that's what we're asking for. And that's what we want. We want a world where everything is done voluntarily and there's no aggression initiated on each other. And we simply not only want to be left alone, but we want to leave other people alone. We don't want to rob anyone to pay for the things that we ourselves want. If we want them, then we should be willing to pay for them. But we should not be willing to rob our neighbor in order to get the things that we want. Is that about how you think, Michael?
Yeah, I'm intrigued and wish to subscribe to your newsletter. Where can people find more information about you and about Liberty?
I'm at badquaker.com, and also freedomfiends.com is a good place to find an archive of our old shows that we've had. How many shows have we done, Michael?
No, this is like 500 and something, 500 and around 530. I don't even know.
And if we're not on the radio, where the listener is at, how do they get us on the radio?
You go to freedomfiends.com. I'd also recommend going to antiwar.com. Mises Institute, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. Free Talk Live, it's another good radio show. It's been a great show, Ben. I really appreciated you dropping some mad scientists on us.
Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Thank you for being had. Worms.
Worms.
Worms.